Scripture reading comes from Acts chapter 7, verses 54 through 58. Acts chapter 7, verses 54 through 58. When they heard these things, they were cut to the heart, and they gnashed at him with their teeth. But he, being full of the Holy Spirit, gazed into heaven and saw the glory of God and Jesus standing at the right hand of God, and said, "Look, I see the heavens open and the Son of Man standing at the right hand of God." And they cried out with a loud voice, stopped their ears, and ran at him with one accord. And they cast him out of the city and stoned him. And the witnesses laid down their clothes at the feet of the young man and saw. Well, good evening, everyone. I'm always thankful for the opportunities that I have. You know, there's a lot of things that go on in our country that we have to consider and think about. And, you know, you can read all kinds of statistics on, you know, the atheist population, the agnostic population, all these things. And it seems like when we look around, we can see the turn away from Christian principles, values, and ideas slowly but surely. But when you look at the statistics, it kind of is interesting because I think when we look at the media and things, we're like, man, you know, it's really bad here, it's really bad here. But when you look at some of the statistics, you know, people that believe in God, and a lot of statistics are still in the majority. Now, I think just because you believe in God doesn't mean that you're going to heaven, and it doesn't mean that you have maybe the appropriate morals that you should have. And I think that's part of the problem, is we look around and maybe the statistics are a little bit misleading. We look at this high population that still believes in God, but yet the people don't feel responsible or obligated or have any, you know, feelings towards the Bible and the morality which it tells us that we should take and adopt in our lives. But as I look out at the United States, I think most of us have the feeling that the people against us are growing. You know, that group, even though the atheist isn't a huge group, it's growing. Even though the agnostics maybe not be a huge group, but it's growing, those people that say, well, I'm not sure if there's a God or not, but the people that believe in God but aren't holding to the words of God, that group is growing. And I think slowly but surely what we realize, which really the Bible I think teaches us, is that we are in the minority. The people that follow the words of God are in the minority. There's not a whole lot of us sometimes. Sometimes that can be discouraging, and that's not the way I want to go at it, but the reality is as you go throughout your life, you're going to face something, and it's called the mob. The majority. You're going to find yourself in a situation from time to time where you're going to be in the workplace, in a room, at a family gathering, where you are in the minority. Most of the people around you don't hold the same values that you do. They don't believe the same things that you do. They don't hold the Bible as the inspired word of God. And you know what? I think we have to learn how to deal with the mob. There's a growing group around us that has forsaken God, that has cast off God, has cast off His word. And we have to consider, how are we going to deal with being the minority? How are we going to deal when we're confronted with the mob? How are we going to deal with a big group of people that does not believe the same things that we do? How are we going to deal with that? That's what we're going to explore this evening. What I want to say is many times when you see that word mob used in the Bible, there's a lot of things that are not good that are about to happen. I mean, we can think of Matthew chapter 26 and verse 47. It says, "And while he was still speaking, behold, Judas, one of the 12, with a great multitude with swords and clubs came from the chief priests and elders of the people." And we all know what happened in that situation. This mob, this multitude comes, and what are they coming? They're coming to get Jesus. In Acts chapter 15, verse 22, it says, "Then the multitude rose up together against them, and the magistrates tore off their clothes and commanded them to be beaten with rods." Sometimes when the mob comes, it's not a good thing. In Acts chapter 21, verses 34 through 35, it says, "And some among the multitude cried out one thing, and some another. So when they could not discern the truth because of the tumult, he commanded him to be taken into the barracks. When he reached the stairs, he had to be carried by the soldiers because of the violence of the mob." How are you going to deal with the mob? You know, it looks like Jesus had multiple occasions where he was confronted by a mob or a multitude, a big group of people, and sometimes that big group of people did not believe Jesus, did not believe his teachings, did not believe the things that he said. And throughout the book of Acts, we see the people of God, the apostles, the disciples, going and spreading the words of God, and many times they found themselves in a situation where they were in the minority and they were dealing with a big group of people that did not believe the same things that they did. What I'd like to look at this evening and explore is some things that we cannot do in relation to the mob. When the mob comes, and surely it will, it'll affect us at some point in our lives, whether it's in the workplace where we're outnumbered, or whether it's at a family gathering where we're outnumbered, at some point you're going to be in the situation where you're in the minority, and you're a big time in the minority. What are you going to do? The number one thing that I think that we cannot do is we cannot satisfy the mob. And I think sometimes people think that they're bigger than they are. We kind of talked about this morning, pride, that idea of pride. If I want to be affected by the mob, you know, a big group of people that don't believe the same things that I do, they won't affect me. They won't have any influence on me. But we look through people throughout the Bible and we see again and again that the mob can certainly have some influence. Look to the one place where the mob has some influence that perhaps it shouldn't have had. Mark chapter 15. Mark chapter 15, verses 6 through 15. Mark chapter 15, verses 6 through 15. It says, now at the feast, he was accustomed to releasing one prisoner to them, whomever they requested, talking about Pilate. And there was one named Barabbas, who was chained with his fellow rebels. They had committed murder in the rebellion. Then the multitude, crying aloud, began to ask him to do just as he had always done for them. But Pilate answered, saying, do you want me to release to you the king of the Jews? For he knew that the chief priests had handed him over because of envy. But the chief priests stirred up the crowd so that he should rather release Barabbas to them. Pilate answered and said to them again, what then do you want me to do with him whom you call the king of the Jews? So they cried out again, crucify him. Then Pilate said, why? What evil has he done? But they cried, all the more, crucify him. So Pilate, wanting to gratify the crowd, released Barabbas to them, and he delivered Jesus after he had forced him to be crucified. Now, I'm not saying that Pilate was necessarily a good man or anything like that. I'm just saying he was influenced by the mob here, wasn't he? And that word is translated different ways in different versions. It says, so Pilate wanting to gratify, in some places it says satisfy. He wanted to satisfy the crowd. He wanted to gratify the crowd. And what's interesting about Pilate and his situation is as we read the text, Pilate looks at Jesus' case and he says, I see no problem with Jesus. I have no issue with Jesus. I don't think Jesus has done anything wrong. Then why would you make the decision that you did? In John chapter 19, verse 4, it says, Pilate then went out to them and said to them, behold, I am bringing him out to you, that you may know that I find no fault in him. Why would Pilate do such a thing? A man that he finds no fault in, that he thinks that a man that he thinks has done nothing wrong, why would he do this? To satisfy the crowd. It was convenient to satisfy, to gratify the crowd because of their anger and many respects to give him. But you know, you think about the decision that Pilate's in. You think about the knowledge that Pilate has. He even admits it. He says, I find no fault with the man. I think that nothing is wrong with the man. I have no fault against him. And you know what his decision ended up leading to? The beating and the crucifixion of Christ. You think about that. Pilate knew that there was no fault in this man. Why would he give in that a man would be beat, that a man would be killed, that was innocent? Because of the crowd. He decided he would satisfy the crowd. You know, one interesting thing that I have observed, and I think we find in this situation as we look on, is that we, as we go throughout our lives, we cannot satisfy the crowd. We cannot satisfy the mob. No matter how loud they yell at us, no matter what they say to us, we cannot satisfy, we cannot gratify the crowd, particularly when it's against the words of God. Because were the Jews really satisfied with just Jesus' life? You know, I think the Bible paints the picture for us. As we go to Acts chapter 9, who do we find? We find Saul. And what's Saul doing at the beginning of chapter 9? He's hunting down those of the way. And where is he going? He's putting them in prison. And in many cases, many of these individuals are killed, such as Stephen and many of these individuals. Were the Jews satisfied with just Jesus' life? They would have been satisfied with Jesus' life if people would have stopped following him. They would have stopped living the life. But they weren't satisfied with just Jesus' life. They were not satisfied. The crowd will not be satisfied. But it's interesting how people will compromise their morality, compromise their lives, and they'll say, the crowd is yelling at me. The crowd is getting so loud. The crowd has told me to do this. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to satisfy them just this one time. I'm just going to gratify them this one time. And after I satisfy them or gratify them this one time, they'll never come back. They'll never ask for more. You know, it's interesting being a school teacher. Not saying that my 8th grade class is a mom. But it's interesting if I took this principle and I would just do anything to satisfy my class at any time. Mr. Lancaster, you know, this week we really don't want homework. We really don't want homework. And they give some really good reasons and they get really loud and they say, we don't want homework. And you know what? I could give in and I could say, you know what? To satisfy you this week, you know, I don't want to hear all the, you know, all the yelling, I don't want to hear all this. No homework this week. Oh, they would be satisfied for a week, but then come around next week. You know what would happen? They would ask the same exact thing over again. They'd say, Mr. Lancaster, you know last week what you did. You know, you let us off and you said we didn't have to do our homework. And then it happens again and again and again. The mob will never be satisfied. And I think sometimes people get caught up in the moment of the pressure, of the loud voices. They hear the voices again and again and again. It seems so loud. It seems so overwhelming. Their voice seems so small in the moment. And what they say is just one time, I'll satisfy the crowd. It won't be any good. People have tried it. You know, sometimes people give in. And they'll satisfy the crowd, You know, if I tried to satisfy my 8th grade students every day, you know what would happen? School would be dismissed. You know, I mean, that's eventually what it would come down to. Well, we don't want homework this week. And then next week, what do we want to do? Well, we want to sit wherever we want. And not only do we want to sit wherever we want to pack up 10 minutes early. Not only do we want to pack up 10 minutes early, we want to pack up 15 minutes early. And then the next thing you know, it's not even class that's happening anymore. They've taken over. Not trying to make that comparison as a mom to my students. But the point is you cannot satisfy the mom. You cannot satisfy them. They will never be satisfied. Particularly when the mob is driven out of immorality. Driven out of those things that we know are not good. You know what the solution is? The solution is to stand. The solution is to stand strong for those things that you know are right. You know, I'm in the classroom, you can see that. I mean, as a teacher, you have to take a stand and say, this is what's best for you. And I'm standing here, and I'm not always going to tell you what you want to hear, or always satisfy you, or always gratify you in these terms. The mob will never be satisfied. The only solution is to stand for what is right. And you know why the mob isn't satisfied? Well, particularly a mob that is immoral, is because they are pursuing things that will never satisfy them. When you pursue sin, when you pursue immorality, when you pursue those things, the Bible teaches us those things will not fulfill your life. You will never be satisfied with those things. But it's interesting how the mob pushes more and more after those things. In 1 John chapter 2 and verse 16 it says, for all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world. A worldly mob pursues worldly things. And we think that we can control the mob by giving in. Saying, okay, have your lust of the flesh. Okay, have your pride of life. You can have those things. They'll never be satisfied with those things. They'll just keep coming again and again and again. They'll never stop. The mob won't be satisfied because they're concerned about worldly things, and worldly things cannot satisfy. I think the Bible teaches that idea in multiple places. In Ecclesiastes chapter 5, verse 10, it talks about money. It says, he who loves silver will not be satisfied with silver. Nor he who loves abundance with increase. This is also his vanity. All those things, the sinful pursuits, immorality, that won't satisfy you. And when you have a mob that is after sin and after immorality, it's going to do you no good to satisfy them. It's going to do you no good to gratify them because they're just going to come back for more and more and more. You know, I think preaching, we have to be very careful. I think that sometimes preaching can very easily creep into that area of trying to satisfy. trying to gratify individuals. In fact, I think that's what we find with these statistics. We're like, well, there's still a lot of people that believe in God, and what's the problem? If they're being given a gospel, a doctrine, that just satisfies them. It just gratifies them. 2 Peter chapter 2, verses 18 through 20, it says, for when they speak great swelling words of emptiness, they are war through lust of the flesh, through lewdness, the ones who have actually escaped from those who live in error. So they have great flowing words of emptiness in 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 18. It says, great flowing words of emptiness, and they're alluring by lust of the flesh. As Christians, we know the only thing that can really satisfy. And it's painted for us again and again and again throughout the New Testament. In John chapter 6 and verse 35, it says that Jesus said to them, I am the bread of life. He who comes to me shall never hunger, and he who believes in me shall never thirst. The only one that can satisfy is God. When you have a mob that's immoral, you think you can satisfy them? You think you can gratify them? You think that you can give something that they will stop? They won't come back for more? They will. You know, they came for Jesus' life and they didn't stop there. I think the New Testament proves that. They didn't just go for Jesus' life, but then they went for every other person that followed Christ. Every other person that was going by the way, they called it. As you see in Acts chapter 9, where Saul's going out and he's getting letters from the high priest. Where are you going? They're going with Christians, those that follow Christ, people of the way. They'll never be satisfied. And I think people fall into that trap, thinking they can satisfy them all. I think they fall into the trap of Pilate. You know, I can just do this one time and it'll solve it. You know, short term, I can solve it. But in the long term, no, you can't. The psalmist said, Psalm 107, verse 9, says, for he satisfies the longing soul and fills the hungry soul with goodness. We want to be filled with goodness. You can be filled, you can be satisfied if you follow Christ. But if you try to follow the mob, you'll be lost. If you try to appease the mob, satisfy the mob, you'll be lost. Another thing I think we can't do in relation to the mob is compromise, particularly when it comes to morality. In Exodus chapter 32, I think we find a big compromise that happens. In Exodus chapter 32, we have Moses and he's up on Mount Sinai. And we have Aaron and the other Israelites down below. Exodus chapter 32. It says, now when the people saw that Moses delayed coming down from the mountain, the people gathered together to Aaron and said to him, come, make us God that shall go before us, for as for this Moses, the man who brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him. And Aaron said to them, break off the golden earrings which are in the ears of your wives, your sons, and your daughters, and bring them to me. So the people broke off the golden earrings which were in their ears and brought them to Aaron, and he received the gold from their hands and fashioned it with an engraving tool and made a molded calf. And they said, this is your God, O Israel, that brought you out of the land of Egypt. And I think we're familiar with that story, and the story unfolds as Moses is up on Mount Sinai, and the Lord says, hey, they're kind of departing already from my word, so on and so forth. But we see there's always pressure to conform. There's always pressure to conform, always pressure to go away from God, always pressure for us to make our own God. A lot of times people will look down and they'll say, you know, oh, look at this, they're making a golden calf, you know, that's pathetic, so on and so forth. People make things that are just like golden calves in their lives today. They're just trying to replace God with something else. So they think that their stadium is better than a golden calf. You know, they think that their sports team is better than a golden calf. They think that this event or this event or this or that is better than a golden calf. Anything that replaces God is a problem. And that's exactly what these people did. They said, hey, let's replace God. Let's replace God just a little bit, you know. Just a little bit. Let's replace God. Just, you know, just for a few days, so on and so forth. Let's just replace God. You cannot compromise. You know, Aaron should have put this to a stop as soon as they came to him. Now, I don't know if they would have listened to him or not. But we don't know, because that's not the decision he made. He made the decision to go along with it. He made the decision to compromise. And some people don't like that, because really, satisfy, gratify, compromise, all these things about mean the same thing. And when you're dealing with a mob, none of them work. You can't satisfy the mob, an immoral mob. You can't gratify an immoral mob. You know what you also can't do? You can't compromise with an immoral mob. You can't say, you know what, if I give them what they want, it'll all work out. It won't all work out in the end if we turn away from God and His teaching. We see the peer pressure. And a lot of times when people think of peer pressure, they just think of the youth. You know what? You can be around a mom at work. You can be around a mom as you go out into the world. And you can be around. Everyone is surrounded by people. Everyone is sometimes in a situation where they're surrounded by people that don't believe the same thing that we do or that I do. When I walk into church every day, I'm in the minority. And whenever you go, you're in the minority. Peer pressure is all around us all the time. The question is, how are you going to handle it? How are you going to deal with the mob? Are you going to satisfy them? Are you going to gratify them? Are you going to compromise? You know, it's interesting when Aaron is confronted, he tries to make all excuses. That's what people do when they conform and gratify the mob. Have you ever talked to somebody who's given in to peer pressure in some form? They'll come up with all kinds of excuses. You know, Aaron's just kind of silly. He kind of says, well, the people, you know, the people. If we turn over in Exodus chapter 32 and verse around 22, says, so Aaron said, do not let the anger of my Lord become hot. You know that the people, that they are set on evil. See, it's not me, it's those other people. And that's what people try to do. They try to put the responsibility on other people. Says, for they said to me, make us God, and that shall go before us. As for this Moses, the man who has brought us out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him. And they said to them, whoever has any gold, let him break it off. So they gave it to me and cast it into the fire, and this calf came out. Man, good excuse, Aaron. Good excuse. But people really don't come up with any better excuses when they give in to the mob, when they give in to peer pressure. They'll say similar things. They'll say, oh, it was this reason, it was this reason, it was this reason. We can't compromise. We can't compromise when it comes to morality. You know, I think Aaron knew there was supposed to be no other God before God. He compromised. You know who didn't compromise? Moses, when he came down from the mountain. You know, he breaks the tablets. Moses did not compromise. Moses stood up to the compromise. He said, no, this is not going to happen. And you know, when we do what Moses does, we probably won't maybe receive as good a reception maybe as Moses did in this case. But a lot of us won't even risk it. A lot of us won't come down the mountain and say, hey, you guys are compromising. What are you guys doing? Why are you compromising with the mob? Why are you doing this? Why are you compromising what God has clearly told us? But some people are too afraid to even do that. They say, well, we don't want to talk about that. We don't want to confront. But the thing is we can't compromise with the mob. You know, I did a little research, and I just assumed this, and then as I started researching, I kind of found it to be true, although it's kind of hard to validate all this stuff, because it was a general idea I had in my head. And the idea I had in my head was in relation to abortion. There's a lot of stuff that's happened with abortion recently, you know, with things that have been passed, so on and so forth. And I just thought, you know, when abortion started, you know what the initial compromise was? If you go all the way back to the beginning, you know what those initial arguments were? You know what? We just want people to be able to have abortions when they're raised and these types of things. Abortion will never be, you know, for anyone else. That's how they first got it through, don't you know? They said, it's just for these cases of race and whatnot. And then what happened? Then we know what happened. It grew and grew, and then it was, you can have an abortion for any reason. You know, any reason. It doesn't matter if it's rape or anything. Well, a woman's choice, right? A woman should have a choice over her own body. She can, and then, what is it even developed into? Now, that if a baby survives and its heart's beating after an attempted abortion, you know what? Kill it on the table. Nothing wrong. It has just gone one little step at a time. And you know why? Because people thought they could compromise with the law. They said, we can compromise here. It's okay if people do abortions in the case of rape. And then it grew into, well, you can do an abortion any time. And you know what it's grown into now? You can do abortion after the child's been born. After it's out of the mom's womb. Murder in all cases. But you know how it started? Little compromise with the mom. We'll compromise here with the mom. We'll compromise here with the mom. And before you know it, we are so far away from the words of God, we've made a mistake. You know, I look at some of the things that we do in our country. We're just as barbaric as the Spartans. You know what the Spartans did? You're a weak child, handicapped child, you know what we do? We throw you out in the mountain. You survive? Fantastic. More likely than not, you won't. You just die out there. We're doing the same thing. You know, people think that we've climbed to this moral peak, and yet really all we're doing is regressing. We're just going back to those same things. There's nothing new under the sun. You know what? These people in these old times are sacrificing their children. We're sacrificing our children just for different reasons. For convenience. Will you compromise with the mom? See, the Bible gives us all these ideas that we should be very careful who we surround ourselves with. I was talking to a young lady one time. She found out a college experience she had. And her friends were really pressing her to go to this party. And she didn't feel comfortable with it. She didn't want to go. She eventually compromised. She said, I'll go. I'll go to the party. Well, guess what? She got to the party and what happened? Well, she got singled out and a guy said, why are you not drinking? Anybody else is drinking here. Why aren't you drinking? In fact, this young man got mad at her and asked her, well, like, what? You think you're better than us? Why don't you take a drink? You're here at the party? Why don't you take a drink? She compromised after compromise. The mob won't give up. It was enough that she was in the presence of them at this drinking party. It wasn't enough for her to just be there. You know what they wanted her to do? Take a drink. Come on, take a drink. The mob will never give up. The mob will take compromise and then put a compromise on top of it and put a compromise on top of it. Their mob won't give up. So when we're out there and we're dealing with the mob, we have to realize we can't satisfy the immoral mob. We cannot negotiate. We cannot satisfy the immoral mob. We cannot compromise with the immoral mob. But yet, that's what we think we can do. You know, peer pressure is all around us. You know, you have to ask yourself the question, will you satisfy the mob? Will you compromise with the mob? And this last one, will you act out because of the mob? I think we can turn to Luke chapter 22 for this one. And I think we're all familiar with this. Will you act out because of the mob? Will you act out because of the people that are around you? In Luke chapter 22, we find someone that we know pretty well. The Apostle Peter. Luke chapter 22, verses 54 through 62. Says, having arrested him, they led him and brought him into the high priest's house. But Peter followed at a distance. Now when he had kindled a fire in the midst of the courtyard and sat down together, Peter sat among them. And a certain servant girl, seeing him as he sat by the fire, looked intently at him and said, This man was also with him. But he denied him, saying, Woman, I do not know him. And after a while, another saw him and said, you also are of them. But Peter said, man, I am not. Then about an hour had passed, another confidently affirmed, saying, surely this fellow also was with him, for he is a Galilean. But Peter said, man, I do not know what you are saying. Immediately, while he was still speaking, the rooster crowed. And the Lord turned and looked at Peter. Then Peter remembered the word of the Lord, how he had said to him, before the rooster crows, you will deny me three times. So Peter went out and wept bitterly. You know, Peter, I mean, he's got a big track record here. And really look at Peter's life. He has really defended Jesus time and time and time and time and time and time and time again. And yet we find Peter, in this case, where he's surrounded by people who don't believe the same things that he is. And what does he do? He acts out because of the mob. He doesn't only act out because of the mob. He really denies the truth because of the mob. And the question is, are you going to do that? When you're surrounded by these people, which you are going to be at some point, are you going to act out because of the mob? Are you going to deny the truth because of the mob? We have to be very careful by the people that we surround ourselves with. My dad always brought up this point in relation to sexual sin. My dad said, you've got to be very careful. Of course, this is words of wisdom to his son. He said, you've got to be very careful what situations you put yourself in. Because he says, when you look through the Bible, and you look at the men that fell to sexual sin, he says, to be honest with the child, I think a lot of them are better than me. You've got to be careful. You've got to be careful. And once again, when it comes to the mob, we've got case in point, the Apostle Peter, who we know after this case, after he goes out and weeps bitterly, he's going to go in Acts chapter 2, preach the first gospel message, and he is going to be preaching it to a crowd of individuals who are probably not going to, because, I mean, he doesn't know, but a group of people that he knows could very possibly be very offended by the words that he's about to say. You have crucified the Christ. You have killed the Christ. You have murdered the Christ. He slipped. He slipped because of the mob. You have to be very careful and mindful of the situations you put yourself in. In terms of sexual sin, you've got to be careful of the situations you put yourself in. You know, you look at these people of the past, David, Solomon, you know, and I said, you know, Am I as good as David? And I'm just, I gotta be careful. We have to be careful. We look at the Apostle Peter and all the things that he did in his life, and yet we see a time of weakness. We're all gonna have times of weakness, and some of those times of weakness could be in relation to when we're surrounded by people that maybe we shouldn't be. In Proverbs chapter 13, verse 20, it says, "He who walks with wise men will be wise, but the companion of fools will be destroyed." We've got to be very careful. In 1 Corinthians chapter 15, and verse 33, it says, "Do not be deceived. Evil company corrupts good morals." We all think that we can handle it. You know what? Peter probably thought he could too when he went into that situation. He thought that he could handle it. It wouldn't affect him. He'd be all right. But yet we see the fall. You know, we look through three examples where I think individuals made mistakes. We see Pilate, he satisfied the mob. We see Aaron, he seems to compromise with the mob. And we see Peter, and it seems like he acts out or denies the truth because of the mob. The question is will we do these things, or will we stand up? You know, our reading, I don't know if you remember it now at this point, but it was Acts chapter 7. We have Stephen. And I really look at Stephen, and I admire Stephen for multiple reasons. He selected out at the very beginning of the church to do some very important things that needed to be done for the church at the time. We see this lesson that he gives in Acts chapter 7. And I start to think this story could be a lot different in Acts chapter 7 if Stephen does any of these things that we talked about this evening. When we look at Acts chapter 7, he preaches this message, so on and so forth, and we can see that the crowd is getting agitated, that the crowd is not wanting to hear the things that he has said. And I just think, how different the story of Stephen would be if he said, "You know what? They're getting mad at me. I'm going to satisfy the crowd. You know what? They're getting mad at me. I'm going to gratify the crowd. You know what? They're getting mad at me, and they're not liking this message that I'm bringing to them. I am going to satisfy, gratify, compromise with the crowd. You know what? And because it's so intimidating, you know what I'm going to do? I'm even going to deny the truth because of the crowd." But that's not the story of Stephen. And you know what? It's not the story of many other individuals in the Bible who stood up against the mob, against individuals who they knew were immoral, that they knew that they had to stand and do what was right. The story of Stephen is one who stood up against the mob and lost his life. You know, we've got a great blessing in this country where that's not something that people can do so quickly. Now, I'm not saying that they won't do it, but they can't do it as quickly as they can in other countries. That when you speak up against the mob and say, "I'm not going to satisfy you. I'm not going to gratify you. I'm not going to compromise your view. I'm not going to deny the truth because of you." We live in a country where you can do those type of things, and you've got some protection. I don't know how much longer we'll have those protections, but we have some protection now. But even, you know, it kind of reminds me of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They say, "If not, you know, even if God does not come and rescue us, I'm going to do what's right. Even if we go into this fiery furnace and we die, we're still going to be doing what's right." That's what I admire about Stephen. A New Testament example of a Christian who stood up against the mob. He lost his life. And many times we find ourselves in a country where we have all kinds of protections, but we give in too easily. And we say, "We'll satisfy the mob today. We'll gratify the mob today. We'll compromise with the mob today. We'll act out for the mob today. We'll deny the truth for the mob today." Hopefully that's not our case. Hopefully we can be a little bit more like Stephen and stand up against the mob when we have the place and opportunity to do so. Perhaps you need to become a New Testament Christian. We really don't want you to do it because of the mob. We don't want you to do it to satisfy us necessarily. We don't want you to do it to compromise. We don't want you to do it because you don't think it's the truth. We want you to do it for every reason that's right. That it is the truth. That Jesus came from heaven, lived his life, and died for us. That he rose again. And if you have heard the gospel, you believe it, you're willing to repent and confess, he can baptize you. He can raise the newness of life and serve him to the best of your ability throughout your life. Perhaps you need to do something in relation to, you walked off a straight and narrow path, you need the prayers of the church. We'd love to help you any way we can, if you please come as we stand as we sing.